Welcome to the exciting final episode in our series on cloud disasters, during which we conclusively answered the question, do I have to back up my data in the cloud? The answer is an unequivocal yes. Not having a good backup and disaster recovery plan for your data in the cloud is nothing short of an existential threat to your company. 2 out of the 10 companies we covered in this series immediately went out of business after what happened. And another killed off an entire line of business. The cloud is an amazing place, and I consider myself an advocate, but it is not magic. It is just someone else's computer. In this episode, we will summarize the lessons that we learned and the major arguments that we settled from our coverage of no less than 10 disasters. If you're just joining us, hopefully this episode will whet your appetite enough to have you go back and listen to or watch those other episodes. We had a good time making them, and we also learned a lot. By the way, if you don't know who I am, I'm W. Curtis Preston, aka Mr. Backup. And I've been passionate about backup and recovery for over 30 years, ever since I had to tell my boss that we had no backups of the production database we just lost. I don't want that to happen to you, and that's why I do this. On this podcast, we turn unappreciated backup admins into cyber recovery heroes. This is the Backup Wrap-Up. Welcome to the show. Support for this podcast comes from Sullivan Strickler. Are you a Source One customer trying to decide what to do since Dell announced its end of life this year? One big problem is that the Source One UI is not designed for such mass migrations, making them slow and costly. The good news is Sullivan Strickler has figured out how to extract data directly from the Source One database much faster and less expensive than the alternatives. For a detailed report on your options, go to backupwrapup.com/source1. I'm W. Curtis Preston, aka Mr. Backup, and I have with me my / trauma sympathizer, Prasanna Maliandi. How's it going, Prasanna?
I'm good, Curtis. Yeah, it's interesting. Of all the things you can complain about or that are wrong in this world, for you, the biggest issue is different operating systems using backslashes differently.
Yeah, so it's because I'm being forced to operate a Windows-based backup server, and I only know how to work in like Unix land, like when I'm doing automation and scripting and stuff, which is the only way I know how to do anything, right? I don't understand. I guess people, if they grew up in Windows land, they learn PowerShell, and they learn, you know, batch programming and what. I didn't learn all that stuff. I learned shell scripting. And so when I want to administer a Windows-based system, the first thing I do is install Cygwin so that I have a Unix-based environment. But when I'm interacting with files, right?
Yep.
So Cygwin is nice in that it translates all the file directory names and everything into slashes, right? So it's, I just have to sort of figure that out. And basically like D:\ becomes /sig drive/d. So you just sort of, that's not too bad. But in case of backup, I'm doing things like I'm running commands that output file names that sometimes are in Windows format and sometimes are in Unix format. And what I've recently discovered is that, and it took me literally just banging my head into the wall a few times to figure this out, is that backslashes behave differently. You know, like I want to massage them, and the first thing I want to do is change them into forward slashes, right? So that I can, so that they're not going to be escaping everything in my Unix shell script, yep. Right? They behave differently on like in standard in than they do in a file. Yep. So if I take the output of a command such as bppl include, which is, you know, show me the files that are in this policy, And I pipe that directly into a, you know, into a series of pipes to massage the output. That backslash behaves differently. I have to escape it differently if I'm just doing a straight line versus if I take the command and actually output it to a file and then look at it. And it basically I have to like if I'm doing it on the command line, I have to escape the escape twice. If I'm doing it in a file, I only have to escape it once. And that's been driving me just absolutely bonkers.
So I think what you do is you just add a whole bunch of escapes in there, you know?
I do.
Slashes.
Still, it works. I'm just like,
yeah.
Does two. Will two work? No, two. No. Three. No. And then three. Like three tells me that I have too many and I have like, it escapes like something later. And I'm like, no. Okay. So we'll take four, you know? And I just do a bunch of them until I get what I want.
It works. Yeah. It's like writing code, right? You compile it, it fails. You're like, oh, I'll fix this. And then it fails again. It's like, oh, I'll fix this. And then you just keep going until eventually you get some errors.
And then, so I find that as annoying as this is, I find that it's actually easier to take a NetBackup command, output it to a file, and then hash through that file rather than just doing it as a series of pipes. And as annoying as that is, it seems more consistent, albeit slower. And it's also slower because the first thing I have to do on that file, you know what I have to do? I have to run the DOS to UNIX command on it.
Oh.
Because of the new line. Because the new line is also different.
Yeah.
It's been fun. That's what I would say.
Oh, Curtis.
So speaking of fun, Persona, we have now terminated our cloud disaster
concluded
series.
Concluded?
What's that?
Concluded.
Concluded? What did I say? Terminated?
No, yeah, terminated just seems. I said, yeah.
I'm done with all these people losing data. Yeah, we have concluded our cloud disaster series. What did you think?
I liked it, actually. It's one of those things, like a disaster happens, you read it in the news, and then you forget about it, right? It's just the next day.
Right.
There are many of these that, like, I don't think any of us had heard about, right? And just being able to go through and just understand and kind of take a look, right? And getting your perspective, right? And seeing, okay, what are these disasters and really sort of doing the research ahead of time. It was kind of fun. I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was what I liked about it was that enough time had passed with most of these disasters that we often had the other half of the story, right? When they happen, at that moment, you check it and you hear, like in the case of the Musi outage, the first thing that you hear is that, you know, Musi has sued Google because, you know, they lost their data. And that makes the headlines and everybody's, there's a lawsuit, you know. But, you know, this is America, so anybody can sue anything. I mean, you may remember that there was a woman who sued Google Maps because she drove her car off a pier, right? Because Google Maps told her to go that way, right? You know, you could sue for anything, but that doesn't mean you're going to be successful. And it was nice to go back and look at the, what happened after. In some of the cases, we got some additional insight from people that were, you know, in and around. I think of the OVH incident, right? That was nice. We got some insight into that and how that OVH really was known for the, you know, being a low cost provider, and so that nobody was surprised when they didn't have backup.
Well, the other thing also that I came to realize from the series is, like you said, time had elapsed. It's also interesting to see how some companies try to sweep things under the rug,
right?
right? And thanks to the wonders of the internet, where nothing is ever gone,
right?
Right, being able to uncover, okay, really, what was it that was initially said versus what do they say today?
Yeah, thank you very much, Internet Archive. Right, that was very helpful. In some cases, we weren't able to get stuff, but there were a lot of cases where we were able to get basically the first version of the story versus the latter version.
But I would say in most of these cases, right, the initial information that people saw was what was allowed to be released, right? Whatever the company had at that time, which sometimes they're working off incomplete information, but they still wanted to provide some information to their users, such as like the OVH incident or Rackspace, right? Where it's just, okay, what information is available? Let me at least push something out there.
Right. And that's what we encourage companies to do, right? Is to be up front about what's happening. And it's okay to say you don't know yet, but acknowledge what's happening, you know, acknowledge what you know when you know it. Don't make stuff up, right? And then the other thing that I would say is we like it when they don't try to pass blame. That happened a couple of times. Yeah. When the blame is, you know, clearly on you and your design, don't try to pass blame. So I came up with a few lessons that I wrote down, and if a few others pop up in our head while we're recording this episode, just come out with them. And the first one is actually, you put that on there. So you want to go for it?
Yeah. So I would say that the most important thing for a lot of these is, if it's important to you, the data, of course, back it up.
Yeah. Right? which is basically backup lesson number one is that.
Or zero, I would say.
Yeah. Backup. Yeah. It's rule zero. It's one that I absolutely cannot argue with, right? It's something that I say to you, right? I say this all the time, that if this data really is important to you, then it should be, you know, backed up, right? And we can talk in a little bit as to what constitutes a backup, and that'll be some of the lessons that we learned along the way. But I'm going to say, in almost all instances, what constitutes a backup is you making a backup, not saying, oh, I got it because it's the cloud or because it's SaaS or because it's, you know, it's not my problem. No, it's always your problem.
Yeah. And there were companies, right? Like Musi went out of business because they lost all their data and they couldn't recover it. And that was the end of the company, right? So...
Yeah, and I'd say that's the first lesson I'm going to say that wasn't actually on the list, is that if you don't get this right, your entire company may just go away, right? That happened in at least two instances in the list of the companies that we found. Either your company or a significant portion of your company may go away. I think of Rackspace, right? Rackspace is now completely out of the hosted exchange business because of what happened with the Rackspace outage, right? So either your entire company or a significant portion of your company can literally just go poof overnight.
Yeah. So what's the first one, Curtis, in your opinion? Like, what's the most important lesson from all of the ones that we've looked at?
3-2-1 rule still rules. And I know that there are other versions of the 3-2-1 rule. In this case, what I'm saying is, if what you're doing for backup, as I make quotes in the air, doesn't at least comply to the 3-2-1 rule, it is not a backup, right? Okay. There are many situations when we look at the stories that we talked about here, where people had what they might have considered a backup, right? You know, Musi is probably the best example of that, right? Where they had their backups with them, but basically they deleted their account, right? The other one would be Codespaces. That's probably the most infamous, I think, where Codespaces was making backups within within AWS, but they didn't follow the 3-2-1 rule. They didn't separate those backups from production. And so when the bad actor went in there, they deleted the entire account. And again, poof, there went their primary as well as their backup. And the same would be true of the SaaS people that, you know, when I think of specifically Microsoft 365, but this is true in so many other cases, is that that if you are not separating that data, if you're not making another copy, they don't have multiple copies of your data, right? That are accessible to you. They may have a DR copy, but as we saw in some of the cases, the DR copy doesn't always work. That DR copy might not be accessible to you, and it might not work. But the point is that if you don't have whatever they have, it's all in the same place. And when very bad things happen, you're SOL.
Yeah, and specifically around the Microsoft case, right? They may have a DR copy, but like you said, that's for their purposes, not to allow you to do your restores.
Right.
That's to make sure if something blows up somewhere from an infrastructure perspective, they can bring things back up and they will try their best to give you back all your data. But there's no guarantees.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, we're going to get more into detail into that in a latter step.
Yeah.
But yeah, so short version, and I have no problem with appending to the 3-2-1 rule. If you want to say 3-2-1-1-0-7-9-5, I don't care, right? And I don't disagree with any of the versions that I've heard, right? Things like making sure that, you know, one of the copies, the biggest one is making sure that one of those copies is an immutable copy, which is a relatively new requirement, and that has to do with cyber attacks. I don't have a problem with that. But if what you're doing doesn't comply with the 3-2-1 rule, three copies of your data on two different types of media, one of which is physically separated from the other, then you don't have a backup.
I do wonder, and maybe it doesn't have to be for this episode, if we should really figure out, have a discussion on an episode of, does the 3-2-1 rule really need to be changed? Because I know that there's like different, like you said, the 3-2-1-1-0.
Yeah.
0-0 may not be a zero, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah. Well, there's various versions out there, and I'm fine with those. I do myself, like, you know, I add to it, one of these copies needs to be immutable. I fully agree with that. Does it need to be part of the 3-2-1 rule? I don't know. I like the 3-2-1 rule for what it does, because what it does is it proves what we've been talking about here, is that if you have a cloud service and all of the copies of your data are all in the same place, you don't have a backup.
Right? Yep. Speaking of which, I would say that the next lesson learned is really around, right, like you mentioned, the cloud is not backing up your data.
Right.
You may think it is backing up your data. They may be doing DR copies for their own purposes, but it's not a backup that you as a customer, a user can go restore from, can go back to any point in time, recover it, all the rest of that.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of people mistake, right? They're like, oh, I have Salesforce, or take your pick, and it's a SaaS service. They host my data. They should be doing my backups. Or Microsoft 365. They should be doing my backups. And I know, Curtis, way back in the day when we were first working together, right, you were like, have you ever taken a look at Microsoft's contract terms of service?
Yeah.
Do you ever see backup in there anywhere?
Right. Yeah, it's just not there, right? That's the part. It is, if you think that your SaaS service is backing up your data, please go look for it in your contract, right? Okay. Because you're not going to find it. There are some exceptions. Interestingly enough, one of the exceptions was covered on our our stories, right? Where we had a vendor that was backing it up. We had a vendor who was advertising that part of their service was backup, which almost never happens, right? You don't see that. Go look at what Microsoft advertises for 365. Look at Salesforce. Backup is not part of the offering, either in terms of what they advertise or what's in your contract. And if it's not in your contract, it doesn't exist, right? So the next one, and this is, we've covered this a little bit already, and that is if they are backing up their data center, that backup is not for you, right? And I see this a lot. There's, again, this one guy that I interact with a lot online that really believes very strongly in the Microsoft way of doing things. And in his idea that Microsoft has, for example, multiple delayed copies of your data, like delayed replicated copies of your data, and that it's going to use that in the case of disaster to be able to recover your environment. And that appears to be true. I've never found it anywhere documented, right? And if it's not documented, if it's not in my contract, then I don't care.
Yeah.
But it appears to be true. However, the story of KPMG, if that story with the size of KPMG, 145,000 employees, if what happened to KPMG doesn't prove to you that you don't get to use Microsoft's backup to save your butt, I don't know what will. This is a giant company paying tons of money to Microsoft every month, and even they weren't able to recover from this giant blunder because it was their fault, and that was not enough to have Microsoft use their DR copy to save them.
Or if we go back and think about like the Salesforce example, right? Yep. Where they changed some permissions and everyone had access to every record, right? And it was like, how do we undo that? And so they tried their best, and hopefully if you had a sandbox copy, they were able to help you out a little bit, but they were basically like, sorry, I can't help you. Good luck.
Yeah, that's interesting because the Salesforce story, it was their blunder.
Yep.
Right? It was their blunder that where they messed up everybody's account. And even then, once we know that Salesforce has a backup, as I make quotes in the air, that you can pay for like $10,000 an instance and it takes like weeks to get it. But they were like, no, we're not going to crack open Pandora's box, even though it was us that messed up all these accounts. So, yeah. So those two incidents, if those don't prove to you that these DR copies that these vendors are making aren't for your purposes, I don't know what will.
Yeah. And these are large companies, right? It's not like a mom and pop cloud vendor, right, doing something, or a SaaS application.
Yeah. Exactly.
So going alongside that, so we're saying don't trust the cloud vendor to do your backup, right? And instead, you really should be using a third-party backup service. If we looked at some of the cases like Deduce, where people in academics and research, they lost their studies, right? Because Deduce went down, or they lost some data, and if they had simply done a backup or even simply exported their data, right, they would have been fine. They wouldn't have had an issue, but they didn't because it wasn't part of the service. There wasn't anything that could easily back that up, and so people lost data.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Deduce story, the Rackspace story, where it would have been probably much easier for companies when Rackspace went down and then they immediately migrated everybody over to 365, would have been much easier for them to recover from that situation if they had their own backup. And of course, the OVH disaster where, so both in the case of OVH and Deduce, we know that backup was something that they advertised as part of the service. By the way, specifically in Deduce, if you look at their website from back then, it says they're doing nightly backups. And and we now know that we don't know exactly how or why, but the closest available backup was a month out, and the one that was and there was something a little funky with it, so they actually went 2 months out. how is that a nightly backup? right. So yeah. I guess what you're saying is, or what I'm saying is that when bad things happen, and bad things happen, admins do wrong things, software engineers do wrong things. When you're trusting a single vendor to do both your IT and your backups of your IT, if they turn out to be incompetent, they're probably also incompetent in your backup, right? Yeah. And so this isn't because both of us used to work for a cloud backup vendor, right? This isn't us trying to, you know, get money for our former employer. This is just common sense, man.
Yeah. And I would also say for those companies where they are focused on both your primary IT application as well as the backup, typically they're not going to put all the money, all the effort in the backup side, because their main goal is to sell and add new features to the primary application. And so usually you end up with something that's either half-baked, not up to date, doesn't support all your various scenarios that someone who is specialized in backup is thinking about.
Yeah, all those things. There are going to be lots of important features, both from a security standpoint, a recovery standpoint, all of that, that are going to be useful to you if you ever actually need to do a restore. In the case of any of the events that happened to the people in the stories that we covered in the last, what was it, like 8 weeks, something like that. what we got next?
So I think you did touch on this a bit earlier, but be careful when someone sells you a feature and tells you it's backup, but it's not backup.
Yeah. So this one's interesting because, and it sounds like we pick on Microsoft a lot. It's not Microsoft. My issue is not Microsoft. It's the people that seem to like, in the case of Microsoft 365, you will not see the documentation referring to retention policies as backup. You won't see it. Retention policies are an e-discovery feature. E-discovery and archive have nothing to do with backup, right? They behave completely differently in terms of the way they save data, the way they pull out data. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, you don't believe what I'm saying, go and try to restore a mailbox using 365 retention policies. Please go try that.
And tell us if it could turn out to be a plausible point in time that mailbox looked like.
It doesn't do it. Yeah. It's all about retention policies, and the associated e-discovery feature is all about how to get all email that ever went into or came out of that box over a period of time. It is not designed to restore your mailbox to the way it looked yesterday, right? Yep. Doesn't restore folders. It doesn't restore all kinds of stuff. And it doesn't know how you have to experience it to truly understand this. And that is that it doesn't know how to make your mailbox look the way it looked yesterday. It doesn't understand that concept. That is a backup and restore concept, right? And so that's
not an archive and retrieval.
Yeah. It's about archive and retrieval, right? Which, if you don't know what we're talking about, there's a whole episode that we talk about why archive and backup are different. Go check that out. I'll put a link in the show notes. But the other reason with 365 is when we look at that story of KPMG, if you have a backup software, let's say, you know, pick your favorite backup software. If you configure it really, 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 really wrong, like just the worst backup configuration ever, you know what it doesn't do?
Blow away your production?
It doesn't blow away your production. Which is another key difference between Microsoft retention policies and backup. because that's what happened in the KPMG story.
You almost want a separation of duties, right? That's the roles and responsibilities. It's like no different than a cloud provider and the customers who are on top of the cloud provider, right? Each person has their own responsibilities and their roles and what they do and what is provided. And it's all clearly articulated in contracts.
Yeah. Retention policies. When this person went to go do what they wanted to do, which was just delete one person's chat, it's like, if I get this right, I will delete one person's chat and I will have a really poor facsimile of backup that is really lousy at restore. That's the best case scenario. If I get it wrong, I'm going to delete the personal chat history of 145,000 employees. It could, by the way, it could have been worse. It could have been worse because retention policies, when you're in them, when you first open them, by the way, retention policy, the manual is 25 pages, right? But you can go in there and you can go for all services, right? Meaning
Exchange, it's not just for chat.
SharePoint. Yeah. For all services, please set retention to one copy, right? So, or zero copy. Literally, in a few mouse clicks, you can blow away your entire 365 environment.
Could you imagine if that had happened and KPMG, which is a huge company, loses everything?
Yeah. I mean, it's bad enough that what they lost, people are like, oh, it's just chat. Well, chat is often quite valuable. Yeah. So, clearly, you've never lived in a company that used chat.
They don't use smoke signals?
What's that?
They don't use smoke signals?
Yeah, it reminds me, there was a company, I'm pretty sure this was a Xerox commercial years ago, and it was like, does this describe your company? Like, if your copier goes down, do people say, it's okay, we'll use carbon paper? Do you remember that?
That's true.
That was a long time ago. So what's our next lesson?
So going alongside what you talked about with Microsoft 365 and retention policies is that's like a specific case for Microsoft, but also cloud providers in general, some of their designs are just awful. Like, I think that's actually being too kind to say awful.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's just downright pathetic.
Yeah.
One of the ones that comes to mind is OVH. Right. And I know I hate picking on OVH because we always pick on OVH, but I'm picking on OVH. Right? And it's really around the fact that they offered a backup service and they basically had the backup server in the same data center, like just a couple rows down in a separate rack. And so when they had a fire, that damaged both production and their backup data.
Yeah. I mean that's bad. I don't know, equally bad, similarly bad. When I think about the fact, you know, if we go back in time, there was a time when Carbonite was everywhere, right? They were advertising. You would think that Carbonite was the single biggest backup vendor on the planet. And they were storing customer backup data on RAID 5 arrays, right? I'm going to say prosumer quality RAID 5 arrays with no dual parity, you know, nothing. And then they, you know, and it was really just a matter of time before what happened to them happened, right? You know, they had a double disk failure and, right, you know, there was that one. And then, you know, we have the other one of, you know, code spaces where they stored their backup in the same place that they stored production. We already talked about that with the 3-2-1 rule.
Yeah. And I think the other one there to also talk about is, and I don't know if it's really poor design or just not understanding backup and backup requirements, is I would actually say Rackspace.
Yeah.
Right? They had a hosted Exchange offering, which is great, but they didn't really have a backup solution. They had never tested it out. They were sort of trying things on the fly after they ran into issues.
Yeah.
Right?
The part of that story that was the worst was it's like, okay, we've been working on this for a couple of weeks now. We think we have a good plan for what, you know, for how we're going to get your data back. And then like a little bit more time passes and it's like, oh, we've now tested the plan and it works. Now we need to go do the plan. Like weeks are going by. So you're like, okay, yeah. So what you're telling us is you're just making this up as you go along, that you never tested this before. Not good. This next one here is that if your cloud vendor is the low cost leader, it will show. Right? This was the case of OVH. They were well acknowledged to be the low cost leader in that space. And it means that they cut corners in a lot of areas. And they cut corners in terms of firefighting. They cut corners in terms of not segregating the backup data, all of that stuff.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a low cost offering. Right. As long as people understand that and the expectations are there. Right, you get for what you paid for, right? Not everyone can afford the Ferrari, the Maybach, right? People go buy the Geo Metro, right?
Yeah,
way back in the day. So there are offerings for different people, and that totally makes sense. But I think what becomes a challenge is when you're not transparent about what people are getting, or you set expectations incorrectly and misrepresent what they are getting.
Yeah, agreed. There are, and again, if you're using a low cost provider, we go back to rule number one, make sure that you're backing up the data somewhere else. I mean, you should do it like no matter what your provider is, but definitely if you're doing a low cost provider, right? Make sure that you know, because they're going to cut corners.
So the final one in our lessons learned is SSDs aren't perfect. And I know, Curtis, we've talked, I think we've had multiple episodes about this. In fact, at home when I was looking for a new sort of, not really backup drive, but just extra storage and debating between SSD or just getting spinning disk. And I know chatting with you, I was like, yeah, we should probably get a disk drive because we're not using the data often, and just the issues that we've seen around SSDs. If you're not using it all the time, the data isn't guaranteed to be there. And this is one of those things where one of my favorite YouTube channels that I watch all the time, Life Uncontained, they lost a bunch of data on SSDs, and people think they're bulletproof. Yes, there's less mechanical spinny parts versus traditional hard drives, but they could still lose data.
Yeah, I think we could say that they probably are more reliable than hard drives, especially if you're moving them around, right?
Yeah.
Which is the case in your, obviously in your mobile device or any sort of camera in the field, but they are not infallible, and there are some specific ways that they behave that are unique to them, some unique problems to SSDs. One of them, you know, you alluded to there, is that it does require, a power to ensure that all of the voltages are there. And over time, if you're not using a given SSD drive, those voltages can drop and you can just lose data. We got a really good message from one of our listeners, and I want to thank them for that. I want to do some more research and talk to somebody who is a specialist in this area. It's not my area of expertise. I don't think it's yours either. But the short version is that while SSDs and various other, you know, not just SSDs, but solid state devices of every kind, that while I think they are more reliable than the a standard hard drive, especially if you're moving it around, so they're great for laptops, they are not infallible and they still need to be backed up. Which brings us back to rule zero. And what's that?
If it's important, back it up.
Exactly. So the cloud isn't perfect. SSDs aren't perfect. Software engineers aren't perfect. Admins aren't perfect. All of these are why we back up. And that
don't forget, malicious users are out there.
And of course, malicious users, malicious and bad actors in general, right? So, you know, like cyber attacks. Only a few of the incidents that we covered were cyber attacks. The rest were mistakes. There was a fire. Trying to think what else, but generally it was just mistakes. This is why we make backups.
Right? Yeah. If it's important, and I think it's also, and I think the other important thing is, like, these are just cases we found, right? There are probably hundreds out there that aren't publicized, right? The company's either gone out of business or no one noticed, right, that their data was missing or other things. These are just things that we have been able to find and at least some information to be able to report out to our listeners on, hey, here's what we see going on.
Exactly. Well, this has been fun. I hope that our, you know, listeners have enjoyed it as much as you and I have enjoyed making the series.
Yeah, no, this has been great, Curtis. Thank you for suggesting this.
All right. Well, thanks to our listeners, and be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. That is a wrap.
The Backup Wrap-Up is written, recorded, and produced by me, W. Curtis Preston. If you need backup or DR consulting, content generation, or expert witness work, check out backupcentral.com. You can also find links from my O'Reilly books on the same website. Remember, this is an independent podcast, and any opinions that you hear are those of the speaker and not necessarily an employer. Thanks for listening.